Rolling Gauchos. I'm Rob Bro. He's
Money Mainville.
The South Carolina Gamecocks are the national champions of the women's game. The men's national championship coming up tomorrow, first Monday in April. Except I don't think it is this year because April 1st was Monday. It used to be the first Monday in April. I guess they missed it by a week this time. Anyways, any thoughts on moving screens or Caitlin Clark's legitimacy, or should we get right into the men's game?
It's kind of some interesting discourse around that to me. Like, initially it was like, that is absolutely not a foul. Like, everyone saw that one angle that was above the waist where, to be fair, did not look like a foul.
Yeah.
Looked like a perfectly set screen. A little bit of contact, but that's okay. Game basketball is tough and physical, and so it happens. And everyone saw the angle where the feet are clearly moving. There's clearly some movement on the bottom half of the screen. And then the conversation became, oh, you can't call that there.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that narrative or line of thinking at all. But maybe that's just me.
No, I've never understood the, and it happens so much in basketball. It happened 2 years ago in the Super Bowl, where it's a ticky-tack foul penalty with the holding there on the Eagles' defensive back. Well, you can't call that in that spot. Why? Why? And in the basketball game, I guess she's getting open for a three that would have taken the lead. I think they're up by two. They're up by one or two. Regardless, I think the bucket would have taken the lead. But her knee is clearly out. Her elbow is clearly out. And she's moving. It's a moving screen. The next day, a basketball, or I guess the same day, whenever it was, I guess it was this the next day. UConn sets a screen on Alabama. The Alabama guy goes flying, and a basketball trainer coach is like, where's the moving screen experts today? It's like, well, his arms are inside of his shoulders, his feet are set, and his knee isn't sticking out into the player's path. Like, it's textbook. So, I don't know. It happens. And I feel like we talk about officiating and referees in every big game, which is unfortunate. But that looked like the right call to me. Now, they didn't win the national championship, so I guess it all goes for naught anyways. But South Carolina is just the better team. Bigger, faster, deeper, stronger, way deeper. 0 points off the bench for Iowa today. I think there was 37 plus for South Carolina. That's a big difference. I'm surprised it was that close, honestly.
And if it was like a reach-in foul, I could get it. Like, that's one of the hardest calls to make in the game. You've got to have like the perfect angle as an official to see if they're getting ball or if they're whacking the arm. But like, that wasn't even close, man. Those feet were sliding. It's behind, it's way out on the perimeter. Like, it's a harder call to make whenever it's inside the arc and you're really condensed. There's not as much spacing, but when you're that alone, it just kind of sticks out like a sore thumb. And then, yeah, I don't really have any rooting interest in this year's women's game. I think Caitlin Clark is exciting. I think she's a ton of fun to watch, but that doesn't necessarily pledge my allegiance to Iowa and make me just really hope that they win the national title. I thought South Carolina, a really good inside-out team, as you mentioned, a lot of depth. And that's how you win games in March, men's or women's. You got a deep bench. You got six or seven starters. You're in really good shape to win some basketball games in a consecutive amount of days.
I watched some women's basketball this year. Watched a lot of Texas Tech basketball, Lady Raiders. I watched some of the tournament games, certainly more than probably years previous. But I have a comparison I want to throw out that people might not like, but I'm just going to say it anyways. To me, the impact of Caitlin Clark on the college game is a lot like the impact Johnny Manziel had. I think Caitlin Clark and Johnny Manziel are the same player, minus the cocaine and Scooby-Doo outfits and partying. They are flashy, capable players. A lot of people will garner them as the greatest to do it in their era. Maybe you get some all-time conversation. That certainly has gone downhill with Johnny Manziel's pro career. But at the time, people were saying Johnny Manziel is the greatest quarterback of all time, and he never won anything. Now, Caitlin Clark has some hardware, Big Ten championship, and some other things that she can hang her hat on. She's the all-time leading scorer in college basketball, though the former all-time leading scorer said that didn't count today or yesterday, whenever that was. But I think ultimately, and if she goes and wins a bunch of Olympic gold medals and WNBA championships or Big Three championships, whatever she wants to do, maybe I change my mind. But right now, she's just a little bit Johnny Manziel to me. Like, flashy, really good, a lot of success. Maybe she's more than Johnny Manziel because she carried the team and Johnny got carried by Mike Evans in that NFL roster he had at A&M. But I don't know. To me, no rings is kind of the conversation you have with great players. Is she a great player? Yes, obviously. Is she in the greatest of all time conversation? I don't know. I'm not a women's basketball historian. But the way everyone talks about her, she's certainly top five. But can you be the greatest without a ring? I don't know. I just don't know how that works.
Yeah, it's hard. I think the way I've kind of always viewed championships, obviously a team effort, right? Like, it's really hard to win a championship when you are far and away the best player on your team and there's a large gap between you and number two.
Certainly.
And I think it's even harder to do that in a single elation tournament like the NCAA tournament or even like the NFL playoffs. I think there's maybe more room for error in something like the NBA where you've got seven games and you can kind of slip one and then kind of carry the rest. But I do think it's a fair comparison in terms of saying players that, you know, really carried most of the load for their team, had a lot of flash, had a lot of explosive capabilities, made the big plays, drew a lot of attention. But at the end of their collegiate careers, I think the one thing that they both probably will look back and say, man, if we could only have this one thing, it would be a title, which, again, there are thousands and thousands of players who think that exact same thing, but they are not quite at that echelon of, hey, I was the greatest at my sport in this point in time. That is a really hard thing to do, especially at a Division I level, to be the best in your sport and to walk away from that and say, hey, I was the best statistically, aesthetically. Like, the media loved me. They wrote everything they wanted about me. They did multiple spots and profiles and premieres on me. But even though I have that, I don't have the title. Like, As a competitor, I imagine that would make a lot of people sick.
Yeah. She also played for two. I mean, it's not like she and I don't think Iowa women's basketball, did I hear that they'd never been to a Final Four?
Yeah, or I think it might have been like one. Yeah.
And then she went to back-to-back in two straight national championship games. I mean, obviously that's more than Johnny Manziel did in his career. And I'm not a Caitlin Clark hater by any stretch of the imagination. I think she's a very good player. And I think it's hilarious all the WNBA players coming out now saying she's in for a rude awakening. She's going to be great. She's going to be great wherever she plays. In that respect, I think it's a lot different than Johnny Manziel. I think her game does translate to whatever level she wants to play at. But it's just a little bit, I don't know. When you get to GOAT conversations, and maybe this is a conversation for 5, 10, 15 years away, when you see a body of work in a professional aspect and maybe you go back and say, hey, we're just talking basketball player now. We're not just talking college player. We're talking basketball player. Then if she goes and dominates the upper levels, and some argue that the college game is more prolific than the WNBA. I don't know. She probably could make more money coming back to Iowa next year. But that's another conversation, another night for discourse. Big Hen says, heck yeah, no, Kyle. My favorite Gauchos is all I need. Thank you, Big Hen. I appreciate it. Kyle's out with the boys tonight, I believe. He wanted to make it, but I think he had Mavericks tickets or something. So he wanted to be here on a Sunday afternoon, but couldn't quite clear his schedule for us, which, you know, coming off the suspension is a little bit underhanded in my opinion, but Kyle will be back soon. That's up to him. That's his decision. All right. Let's see. The other question in the chat line, can Tech baseball play its way into the tournament? I believe you mean the NCAA tournament. They've won six straight. Stanford is not a good baseball team, but they beat them twice. They finished off the UCF series with a win. That's three in a row. Then you sweep Houston. And was it pretty? No, not always. Offensively, it was. Defensively, there were a couple of shining moments, a couple of double plays, some runners thrown out at second. Defensively, there were some not so shining plays, with still some errors and some missed fly balls and other things to go into it. The pitching was either really good or really bad this weekend, and you had some bullpen pieces that were giving up some runs, but you also had some bullpen pieces come in and look really good, like Josh Sanders, who pitched seven innings of clean baseball this week, going back to Stanford and into Houston. I'll say this. You play ACU in Abilene on Tuesday, I believe. Then you have a three-game set with TCU. TCU just got swept by Cincinnati and got run-ruled in the final game of the series. TCU is now underwater, way underwater. And TCU's conversation is now, can we make it to the Big 12 tournament? And I'm not exaggerating. They are in dire straits. You play ACU, then you play TCU in Fort Worth. TCU has their backs against the wall. Both TCU and Texas Tech desperately need a series win next weekend. If you win two of three from TCU, you are way ahead of the curve when it comes to getting into the Big 12 tournament. Now you have three new teams in college baseball in the Big 12 this year. So maybe you get a team or two more into the NCAA tournament. The latest Baseball America projection had you first four out, but had eight Big 12 teams in the field. And I think that flips. I think you have a real opportunity of being one of the eight teams. If there are that many, I don't think there will be. But you have a huge week, because after TCU money, you play Arkansas twice at Baum. And if you could win the TCU series and then take one from Arkansas, you're in a really good position and you control your own destiny. If you beat TCU and lose two to Arkansas, your RPI still goes up, because that's how RPI works, and Arkansas is the number one RPI team in the world. If you sweep TCU and beat Arkansas twice, you are on an absolute scorcher and maybe back on the road to hosting. So this is a huge week. And if you lose three to TCU and lose two to Arkansas, you're back where you were and struggling to be in the tournament. So it is a pivotal week for the Texas Tech baseball tournament hopes. And I think, personally, you're in a really good spot right now. You found some bullpen pieces you can trust. If you can get starter innings from guys, and Robinson threw 120 pitches. If he can do 120 pitches in 7 or 8 innings instead of 5 or 6, and you could save some bullpen pieces on Saturday and get them to the next day, and Josh Sanders keeps up what he's doing, and Parker Hetera keeps up what he's doing, and you don't have to throw the back end of this bullpen, you're in a really good position if the offense plays how it played this weekend. And at Barks, like in Fort Worth and in Fayetteville, Arkansas, they do that. So you have a good opportunity to be in the tournament, yes.
I think I got home in the middle of the game yesterday, and it was like 12-2. And I was like, oh, I'm not watching this. I'm gonna go do something else. And I saw the final, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
What?
It got interesting. It got interesting again today. I think you finished 12-8. It wasn't quite where you were for a minute there, but again, sweeping in the Big 12 is hard. And you look at TCU, you know, you're now above water in Big 12 play. I think you're 9-8. They are way below. And that was a sweep by Cincinnati. You go back, Kansas, West Virginia has been an interesting series. Oklahoma State, Oklahoma has been an interesting series. Texas has had some interesting series in the last couple of weeks. Oklahoma, again, up there at the top of the conference with several other teams. But you still have a lot of opportunity left. And how your schedule's worked out, you have some, I mean, Big 12 front runners left on the schedule that I don't think they've won games, but I don't think they're way better than Texas Tech is. I think Texas Tech just lost some games they could have won, which is kind of a cop-out to say. But a long way to say, I think you control your own destiny in the baseball season, and you're in a good spot because you swept Houston. You needed that desperately, and you did it. And it wasn't perfect, but you did it. And now you have ACU and TCU and Arkansas back-to-back-to-back, which are three pretty good opponents for your style and what you can do and how nationally you'll be looked at if you win all three of those or split the two-game series. So, all right, let's get back into basketball. The portal has been not non-existent because you've had a visit or two. You had the kid in from Wyoming?
Correct.
6'7 wing, 40% from three. 6'7 wing, defensive guy, perks my ears up. Not defensive. It's just 6'7.
He's got some really good stuff offensively. He's pretty raw defensively. I think they might be able to get something out of him. Like, obviously, he has that length. He's pretty athletic, but the execution defensively could definitely use some polishing.
Fair. And, you know, a great basketball coach once said, Mark Adams, you recruit offensive players and teach them how to play defense. So maybe that's where you're going there. And, again, we thought Gas was going to be all defense, and it wasn't this year. There was some defense. If there was an obvious emphasis on offense this year and offensive efficiency. So going into year two now, allegedly that visit went well, I heard. Are there any other visits on the books? The Youngstown State kid, is there any news on his waiver? I have not heard anything about his waiver. He's still down between Texas Tech, Xavier, and Auburn, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure that ever happened. Kind of what I was hearing on that was that it was looking less and less likely that he was actually going to receive that waiver. And so I don't know if that visit kind of fell through with that in mind, if it did happen and it was kind of like, hey, we're in wait and see mode. We're not going to really, you know, plan ahead like we have this scholarship taken. I don't know. So that'll be interesting because he's a good player to me too. And that's kind of a bummer that Tech Hoops guy was kind of the first one to point out like, hey, I don't know if this is going to happen. because even on our kind of off-season hub that I'm writing on Patreon right now, I kind of typed out nonchalantly, like going into his sixth year, not even thinking about how improbable that was, just because trying to think through eligibility and how much guys can play the last couple of years has been such a mess. But he's a good player. And so if he does get that waiver, man, it'd be a bummer to not see him in a Red Raider jersey. But obviously, you are so early into the cycle. And I think that's what a lot of people are failing to realize, because your season did end early, ended in the first weekend of the tournament, that it feels like you're behind. And you've had so much subtraction. You've had so much movement. And so I understand the notion of like, man, like, we do not have enough scholarship players right now, which you don't. But it's also really early.
Yeah. When will there be some movement? Because I know a lot of people are discussing and asking. I mean, maybe not a complete roster, because 7-8 guys, and you might even hold a roster spot or two if you think you get a bunch of starters here early. I think the last guy you got last year was July, August?
Yeah, you got Darion Williams and Joe Toussaint in mid-July, I believe.
So there's some work here to be done. First recruit next 2 weeks, I think, is pretty likely. But what do you think about a full starting lineup taking shape by the middle of May? Is that too early? Are people really taking it slow? Are you waiting for grad transfers who are testing the NBA waters? Because that's the middle of June. You saw that with several guys over the last several years in the transfer portal. I mean, is it the end of June you're really looking at taking a full roster into shape, or are you going to get in July again?
Yeah, I imagine it will be in the summer. I would say you use, oh man, I think you've got 8 Scholies right now to use. I imagine you use at least 3 of those in the next month. One pretty soon, one following the national championship, one maybe on the back end of the month. And then I think you kind of take those remaining scholarships and kind of go into the summer with them. Try and find some guys that are hanging out in the bottom of the barrel, who people are passing up, but who you feel like you've got a good eval on. I really do think it's a waiting game, and I'm really not in the business of carrying anybody's water. Like, you can think whatever you want to think, doesn't really affect me. I just do think the way that college basketball off seasons are progressing, it's becoming so much more of a waiting game, so much more patience required, which is ironic because the portal's opening, you know, in the middle of the tournament. But I really do think that's how that's going to play out. And now you've got other things that are throwing a wrench in this, like Arkansas is open, which is a big job and has been a dominant player in the portal for years under Musselman. Now he's at USC. Is USC going to start trying to get some of these guys? Who gets hired at Arkansas? You know, if it's Will Wade, is he going to try and come in and get some of these guys that are at the top of the portal like Musselman did? And so a lot of movement, man. And I really do think the best philosophy is just to wait. And I totally get the sentiment that it doesn't feel great right now, though. I get it. But I get it and it sucks, but I'm also not panicking, if that makes sense.
Speaking of that Arkansas job with Musbus going to USC, Chris Beard turns it down, allegedly. Kansas State head coach Jerome Tang pulls himself out of the running, allegedly, with just an incredibly on-brand video with some elevation worship music on the back end of that. Beautiful. So right now, the leading candidates, I believe Will Wade interviewed. Has he taken himself out? I don't think so. I saw two more names yesterday. The head coach of Little Rock, Arkansas, and Chris Hyonjohns from Mississippi State interviewing. So there's the Arkansas job update. I think a lot of people thought Chris Beard was kind of an automatic. But I think Ole Miss is kind of a sneaky player in the SEC. They certainly are in football with a lot of money going into the Grove and that program. What is it? The SIP. Come see me at the SIP. But maybe you see some of that spilling over into basketball and they're offering Coach Beard enough to stay for at least another year. He's not going to be there long term, I don't think, but certainly good enough for a season two there in at Ole Miss.
I'd be kind of interested to know, like, what the candidate perspective is on this Arkansas job, because obviously Musselman left willingly to USC, which, I mean, we can have a conversation about if it's a better job. Is it like a top 10 job in college basketball? I would not say so. Like, I get the living in LA appeal. I think he's a West Coast guy, so part of that makes sense. But like, fan support has not been there. You're about to have a brutal travel schedule moving into the Big Ten. I just, I've been to Fayetteville a couple of times. That is an awesome city. I love that city. And I do think that there's some maybe some general perception around the AD and like the video that he did with Musselman, and then he did that podcast the other week, which was just so strange. And it's like, do I really want to work under this guy? Like, do I want to trust my job security under this guy? I don't know, but from all accounts, it seems like their NIL situation is fine. Like, they've been able to land a ton of really good recruits, really good portal guys over the years. And so I'm interested to kind of see why that job is not as desirable as maybe it seemed whenever it first opened. Because I'm with you. I thought it was definitely going to be Beard, even after signing the extension. Maybe he goes to the AD at Ole Miss and says, hey, I might take this job unless you give me some more NIL money.
An airplane,
you know. And then I thought, you know, Tang says, hey, I'm going to take this Arkansas job, but I love it here at Kansas State. Would love to stick around for an extra so-and-so million a year. And now it's just like, man, like, we're talking about the head coach at Little Rock. Like, and those are two competent coaches. I wouldn't necessarily say elite for both of them, but two more than competent coaches, two good candidates. I think it's fair to say that.
Yeah.
And now it feels like we're like, ooh. Like, even Jan's like, I think he's a good coach, but he's been in the SEC for 2 years, I think. And even his SEC record is iffy.
Yeah, this might have even – no, I guess this was his second year, yeah. Because you hammered whoever it was before him when he came to Lubbock. Yeah, head into year 8-10 both years, finished ninth at Mississippi State twice, 21-13, 21-14. Wow. Wow. Kirkwood, Independence, Howard, Bowling Green, New Mexico State. That's the Chris Hyonjohns experience. That's an interesting road. Let's see. I mean, even if they hire Hyonjohns or whoever else, even if they go get a big name and it's off the board and it's surprising, it's still their third or fourth choice. I think Will Wade is a sneaky hire. He probably would have been my first choice over a couple of the other ones. But if they're interviewing two more pretty capable names after they interview Will Wade, it just doesn't seem... And due diligence, I get it, whatever it is. But why would you float two extra names after Will Wade if Will Wade is locked in? It doesn't seem like Will Wade's going to be the head coach at Arkansas. And you mentioned the atmosphere Arkansas has the fan supports. They have the history. But we've talked in the past couple of weeks about the Texas Tech Twitter world. Arkansas is way more toxic, in my opinion. They are ruthless. And Fayetteville as a city is beautiful. I think underrated Arkansas-wise. I don't think people think of Arkansas and think of beautiful. Lots of trees, hills, whatever it is. But otherwise, it's a lot like Lubbock. I mean, the college town. It's Fayetteville because of the University of Arkansas. Nobody else is going to Fayetteville for anything else, really. I don't know how big Fayetteville is, but you have to want to be at a school like Arkansas. And Coach Muss obviously sells out because, well, allegedly his wife hated Fayetteville and wanted to go to Los Angeles. Los Angeles jobs open up. He probably calls them and says, hey, don't interview anybody else. I'm coming. And they're like, hell yeah, it's Coach Muss. So I don't know. I think that Arkansas job is interesting, but they're striking out more than they're getting hits right now. And that's not good. That's not a good look for your program. I mean, with Texas Tech, you didn't make a splash hire with Mark Adams. You just kept the guy that was there, but allegedly your first choice, right? You did some due diligence on other guys, but first choice and McCasland, not a big splash. You didn't go stealing from another Power Five, but really good coach in his own right. And by all intents and purposes, kind of a first choice there too. But Arkansas now on choice three or four, and I don't even know if those guys are going to take it. Surely the Little Rock guy would step up into Division One. Will Wade, at this point, if he can get McNeese into the tournament again, can have his choice, and he can stay there until he wants to come somewhere else. And if Arkansas isn't the job he wants, then there's no reason he should have to take it. So,
I saw a list today. It was from a fan, so like – no legitimacy to it, but they were listing some candidates that they would want, and they listed Dusty Hannes. And I was like,
Arkansas legend.
Arkansas legend, Texas Tech legend. Like, man, imagine going from Chris Beard, Jerome Tang, Dusty Hannes, like within a couple of days. That's a bumpy road.
Is he coaching? I thought he was still playing.
I think he's playing internationally.
Yeah, Tel Aviv in the Israeli Basketball Premier League. Hilarious. I mean, that is, he's been in the professional ranks since 2017. In the Israeli league. That is something there. G League MVP, I believe, in 2020. Speaking of G League MVPs,
that's what Texas Tech does. Just pumping them out.
Mac McClung with the Osceola Magic getting his MVP. I think they won the championship last year. Wasn't it Mac McClung versus Jarrett Culver in the championship? And I guess they're going back-to-back here trying to get another one. There you go. All right, there's basketball happening tomorrow night as well. Two number ones. When we went through our bracket, I think we were willing on Illinois, and maybe we picked Iowa State over them, but we acknowledged UConn as a quality team. Purdue, I remember saying, Purdue always loses early, but it feels like this is the year they kind of push through. I still thought they would lose to Houston in the Final Four, but Houston was not in the Final Four. Houston lost before, so Purdue with the opening, they take advantage. I mean, this is a team versus a player, maybe. Is it Zach Edey, the Caitlin Clark, and UConn the deeper, stronger team, or does Purdue really have a chance here?
Yeah, I think the more I've watched Purdue, and this doesn't change the fact that I absolutely hate watching them, and I think it's not fun basketball. Don't care what anybody says. Can't change my mind. I think they do have some good complementary pieces around ED. Like Braden Smith is a good piece. Fletcher Lawyer, Lance Jones. He took some bad shots against NC State. Got under Matt Painter's skin a little bit, but I do think they have the pieces to play inside out, and I think you saw that in games like Utah State, somewhat in Tennessee, they showed some flashes against it. But man, their offense against NC State did not look good. And granted, they played a great defensive game, did a good job at keeping Burns under control. But it's kind of crazy to see that Purdue team score 63 points and see that and feel bullish about them going into a game against the number one offensive team in the country. The more I've watched UConn, I really hate what they're doing with the narrative about, like, everyone's trying to prevent us from repeating, oh, our plane broke, oh, we're playing on the day of the solar eclipse, oh, this, oh, that.
Yeah.
I hate that so much. But I do think that they're a really fun basketball team. Like, Klingon's a lot of fun. Love his game. Tristan Newton's a really good piece, can kind of do it all. Stephon Castle, young guy. I think he's a freshman. Really, really talented. And so I like this UConn team. Also, I like their jerseys more. So feeling bullish on the Huskies.
Same. The line is -6.5 for UConn. It opened -7.5, so it's moved toward Purdue a whole point. The total 146.5. What are your thoughts there?
Oh, man. UConn money line. I don't know if I'd pick them to cover. Yeah, I think I'd probably do UConn money line. And then I will take the under. Just barely, though. Like, maybe like a 73-70 game. Get you 143.
Ooh. Yeah, I'll take UConn to cover. And just for the sake of basketball, I'll take the over. I don't know what it is. 80 to 75. Is it a snug over? Was it 140? Yeah. We'll go with that. That's one. That's over. Yeah. There you go. It's 5 or 6 over. The last teams to go back-to-back. Let's see. The last one was Florida, 07-06. Is that here?
I think that's the first team to make back-to-back Final Fours, too. After winning the national title, the first team that won a title and then made the Final Four the year after. So UConn's in pretty rare air at this point.
That's in the extended tournament. It's like Duke won back-to-back in 91 and 92. UCLA won back-to-back in 64 and 65, 67 through 73. They won a bunch of them in a row, but that's not the full 64. So I'm guessing the extended tournament there in Florida, 06-07, the only team to do it. Which, you know, obviously impressive. That's a couple of extra games there. The Huskies are 66-11 in the last two seasons. And they have dominated. In this tournament, 91-52 over Stetson, 75-58 Northwestern, 82-52 over San Diego State, 77-52 over Illinois, and then handling Alabama. I think they beat them by 14. Just an absolute wagon. Purdue, obviously, you know, has had some success through the tournament too, but haven't looked quite as elite until maybe last night when they put away NC State. But NC State, again, an 11 seed, and Cinderella's always look great until the slipper falls off. Yeah, I'll take UConn to cover and win back to back. I I don't like it, but maybe that pushes them into the Big 12 conversation again. Or maybe we're still waiting for the ACC teams.
Do you have a Zach Edey points total?
I bet I can find one.
Might be one of our last opportunities to talk about a player prop in college hoops.
They taking those away?
There was some conversation from the NCAA on that. Not wanting to have a NBA situation on their hands, I guess.
Oh, that was awesome. That guy was so obvious.
Jonte Porter.
Yeah.
With an eye injury.
Yeah. Just checked himself out of the game. Oh, man. Oh, man. Why do I always have to log back into this thing? All right. Player props. College basketball. Zach Edey, 24.5.
I'm going under.
His points, rebounds, assists is 38. Can he get the double-double plus?
Probably. He's such a good rebounder, man. Like, I'll give him that.
Yeah.
He is an incredible rebounder. Has a lot to do with his size, obviously, but the way that he goes up vertically, the way he positions his body, it's good basketball, man. I love a good rebounder.
The most popular picks, obviously those two Edey picks are in the top. Donovan Clingan from UConn, the center, is at a even 14. Can Zach Edey play some defense? Fletcher Lawyer, the guard from Purdue, at 10 even points. Donovan Clingan, points, rebounds, assists at 23.5. Is there some value there?
I like that.
Zach Edey boards at 12 even.
I like the over there. Although I did see this quote from John Fanta today that apparently he asked him like, hey, what are you going to do the night before the national championship game? He said he's going to go eat some sushi. It's April in Phoenix, man. Might be time to take the unders.
Zach Edey, rebounds plus assists at 14. So you get value there if you think he's going over on the rebounds. If you can get one or two assists. Get the over on both. You don't get any extra juice for doing that, but Braden Smith, rebounds, assists for Purdue, guard, 11.5. Alex Caraban, 18 points, rebounds, assists, 12.5 points.
Probably under. I feel like it's going to be a lot of UConn guards in this game.
Yeah. Stephon Castle, 11 points. Tristan Newton, 15.5. Cam Spencer, 14.5. Those are all the guards points totals. Not sponsored, but if you're wondering, those are from Prize Picks. Prize Picks, which is legal in Texas. Not a lot else is. Okay. Anything else? Any final thoughts?
One more basketball game, and then we're full throttle in the off season, which is a bummer because I love watching basketball.
Yeah.
So now it'll be primarily NBA for me. I don't enjoy it as much as the college game, but yeah. I will watch. And then just watching a lot of film on portal targets. So excited for that aspect because it is fun to kind of do some scouting, some evaluation, kind of project guys who are coming into your program or who could be coming into your program, but not always as fun as watching a live game. So definitely going to miss that for the next 7 months.
NBA question. The Nuggets and Timberwolves have been at the top of the West the whole season, pretty much. The Thunder right there with them. The Mavericks, though, are on an absolute heater. Could you call them the, maybe not the favorites in the playoffs in the West, but up there with Denver and Minnesota right now as maybe a Western Conference Finals appearance in the future?
I think so. I think I'd probably put them third. Like, the Nuggets are always going to be pretty bullish because of Jokic. I think OKC looks pretty mean right now. I know the Timberwolves have their defensive efficiency, but with no Cat, that's kind of hard. Now, does he make it back in time for the playoffs? I don't know if that's been officially ruled out or not yet. But yeah, I think outside of the Nuggets and OKC, what the Mavs have done to improve defensively has been pretty noteworthy. And then obviously, you have Luka, you have Kyrie. All you kind of need is for the pieces around them to start coming along. And now you've got a really good team, which a lot of them have. Like, Gafford's been really good. Lively's been good. PJ Washington has been amazing. If you can get Tim Hardaway Jr. to have, be more consistent in a 7-game series, that's a fun team to watch.
If the playoffs started today, it'd be the Clippers-Mavericks 4-5, I believe.
God, I hate that matchup, man. It feels like every year.
Yeah. But you also have the Lakers, Kings, Warriors. How does the play-in work? Is it 7-8 play, 9-10?
I have no idea. I've tried to figure it out like 3 different times over the last couple of weeks, and I just give up.
There's like a double play-in. Anyways, the Lakers might be involved in that play, and they're at the 8th seed right now, but pretty much tied with the Pelicans. The Pelicans are 4-6 in the last 10. The Lakers are 9-1. So if the Lakers can win a couple of more times here and pass the Pelicans, maybe even the Suns at this point, and get up. Obviously, that's Darvin Ham coaching there. Why I bring up the Lakers, not because I'm a LeBron supporter like Kyle. But there you go. There's some NBA talk just for extra.
My fantasy team is in the championship right now. It's looking grim. I've got another week, but I think I'm down like 200 points, unfortunately. So,
yeah. I played fantasy basketball 1 year. I was like, that is too much. Too much to keep up with for me.
I only do it if I know that everyone else in the league is like not really going to pay attention to the waiver wire and I can just like dominate. Like right now, my team is so good. Like I've got like Wembanyama, LeBron, Austin Reeves, Chet, Paul George, like just way too much depth for anybody to have. But people just start dropping guys whenever they get hurt. And it's like, man, I will have your scraps.
Keep them to the end. All right. UFL is also exciting. San Antonio came back. They did the onside kick. They do like 4th and 15 onside kick. So you start the drive at the 25 or whatever, 4th and 15. They got it. It was controversial, but they got it. Drove down, scored. I think they came back from like 18 or 19 in like 3 minutes. So pretty fantastic showing there. UFL football, it's a decent product. We'll see what happens. They filed for 8 new cities. I wonder if they're completely revamping next year or if they're going to expand back into it because they dropped 8 teams to combine. So I wonder if they just said, all right, let's drop 8 teams, play for a season, and then expand back to 16 when we kind of get our feet underneath us as a combo league. But I've already watched more UFL this year, and I think I watched XFL, USFL combined last year. So it's a pretty good product. We'll see how it is in 3 or 4 weeks once the novelty's worn off. But it is what it is. All right. Also, WrestleMania tonight. Any WrestleMania picks for you? Does Cody Rhodes finish the story, Money?
Yes.
Okay. It's been a year in the making. Really a decade in the making. From Stardust to the Independence. His father never won the title. He's going to win it for his dad. His dad died in like 2016. So it's a faithful story there in the wrestling. They call it the long-term booking, Money. Long-term booking. So we'll root for Cody Rhodes tonight. All right, that's all I have.
Love y'all.